Let's start with our study this evening. We're continuing through our study of opening up Proverbs. Tonight, we're in lesson number 9, which is on the topic of financial wisdom. And the last chapters of our study are more devoted to topical themes in Proverbs. And so tonight we're looking at the theme of wisdom, which is a very, very prominent theme throughout the book of Proverbs, shows up many, many times. And so we're going to focus on that tonight. And if you think about it, that's really an appropriate topic for our age, isn't it? For our culture, because we live in a very materialistic culture. Seems like everywhere you look, you receive the message that the path to happiness is through money, or through the things that money can buy, or through the status that money can give you. And so money is one of our chief gods of our culture. And so it's important for us as Christians to think about how we should relate to money. We need it to live in this world, but yet we should approach it with the right mindset, with right wisdom, to know how to use it properly for the glory of God. And he says toward the beginning of the lesson that this issue of money, the use of money, is really a test of our character and probably reveals our character just about more than anything else. It reveals our priorities, our values. It reveals what is important to us. And he also says that most financial problems are really at the foundation, spiritual problems. And so difficulties with money, bankruptcy, heavy indebtedness, taking advantage of others through economics, money, a lot of this is really at the root of it is a spiritual problem. And so there's a great intersection here between our spiritual lives and the way that we use our resources. And he begins with just thinking about a theology of money. And in thinking about the relationship of God to our money, the important way to think about it is that everything ultimately belongs to God. Everything is God's. Psalm 50 verse 10 says that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. So everything, it all belongs to God. Deuteronomy 8 verse 18 says, it is he, that is God, who is giving you power to make wealth. Paul says in Acts chapter 17 that the very breath that we breathe is a gift from God. So even the ability to go to work every day and earn the money that we do is a gift from God. It all belongs to God. So if it all belongs to God, then how should we relate to it? In the lesson, I think he takes the right approach, and that is that we should view ourselves as stewards, or one analogy that he uses as we are like tenant farmers on God's land. So we are, in a sense, leasing this or using it for a set period of time, but ultimately it belongs to God. Because if you think about it, we can own a particular piece of land, but how long do we own that land for? We only own it for as long as we live, right? I mean, if we die, the ownership of that passes to someone else, doesn't it? But God owns it for eternity. So it changes hands because we're finite and we only live for a certain amount of time, but the earth belongs to the Lord for all of eternity. And so we need to view ourselves as stewards, as managing God's resources. And if we have that outlook, it will make us much more generous. It will make us less selfish, and will give us a better relationship to our resources and our money. One of the questions that we have to wrestle with in Proverbs is, are the wise always wealthy? Because many, many Proverbs throughout the book talk about the fact that those who are diligent, those who are wise, those who invest their time and resources well, they're going to prosper in the end. And so we have to ask the question, is every wise person also wealthy, financially speaking, in material things? And for this, we have to kind of go back and step back to the beginning of our study and remember the purpose of Proverbs and how Proverbs function. Two things to consider here. One is Proverbs are not an exhaustive treatment of every subject. Proverbs are short, memorable sayings about the way things that generally work in God's world. So generally speaking, those who are wise, those who are diligent, those who work hard, those who invest their money in wise investments, they're going to reap the fruit of those choices and that labor. Likewise, those who are lazy and don't apply themselves or they make foolish investments, generally speaking, they're going to come to ruin. But we all know exceptions, right? We know exceptions where someone who maybe didn't work hard, didn't apply themselves, but they struck it rich in the lottery or they got an inheritance. So there are times when those who are lazy still get wealthy. There are times when those who are wise don't end up financially rich because of different things that may happen in their lives that are outside of their control. And so we need to remember that these are not exhaustive statements about the way things happen in every circumstance, but they're the way the things that generally work in God's world. Another consideration is that Proverbs is set within the context of the Old Covenant. So within the context of God's dealing with a particular nation, with geographical boundaries, and with a king under God's authority, obeying God's law that was given to Moses at Sinai. And in Deuteronomy, there are specific blessings and curses that are spelled out for obedience or disobedience to the covenant. And a lot of those have to do with the land and with prosperity in the land. And so some of what Proverbs is talking about is within that setting of living in Canaan, living in the promised land under God's king, under the authority of God's law. And if you live in that light, then you can expect to receive the blessings of the covenant. One of the things that he mentions is in the new covenant, we're not necessarily a people with a land. We're not necessarily a people with geographical boundaries or with an earthly king over us. Our king is ultimately God, and our citizenship is ultimately in heaven. And so because of that, the New Testament writers often talk about the fact that we are like pilgrims passing through, or we could think of ourselves as even like the people of Israel in exile, awaiting the time when we can go back home to God's country, to God's kingdom. And so living as exiles, living as pilgrims in this fallen world, we cannot necessarily expect the same kind of correspondence between obedience and blessing or disobedience and cursing as there was in the old covenant within the promised land of Israel, because we're living in amongst the world now. And amongst the world, especially in places where Christianity is persecuted, you're not going to be wealthy, are you? You go back to the early centuries of the church, and there were a lot of incredibly devout, wise Christians who were following the Lord Jesus Christ, but yet almost all Christians in the first centuries of the church were poor. They were poor. And that's not because Proverbs isn't true. It's just because the circumstances were different than in which Proverbs was written. And so we need to keep that in mind as we think about this and think about the truths of financial wisdom. And so with that kind of framework or that foundation, let's walk through some of the Proverbs and how they treat this topic of money. First of all, we need a balanced view of money. And one of the ways that we can understand this is from a summary statement in Proverbs 30, 8 and 9, in which the wise man says, "I don't want to be so poor that I'm tempted to steal to get what I need. And I don't want to be so rich that I lord it over others or become or trust in myself, in my riches, and forget the Lord." And so that's kind of a way of being balanced with money, is I want to be content in this place where God has given me and seeking at least the basic necessities of life, but not overly desiring abundant wealth and making that my pursuit in life. So with that idea, money can be good, and it's useful, isn't it? So we need money. We need money to put food on the table. We need money to provide for our families. We need money to put shelter over our heads. Money is useful even in generosity, isn't it? To give to other people. So money is useful for good. So money in and of itself is not bad, is it? But Paul says in 1 Timothy that it's the love of money, isn't it? It's the love of money. It's the pursuit of money as an end unto itself. That is what leads to all kinds of other evils. So we need money. Money can be good when it's used for right purposes. But like many other things, money can be turned by the evil one into being used for wrong things. The devil likes to do that with a lot of things that God has said are good, doesn't he? The devil takes things that have been created for our benefit, for good, and the devil twists them into using them for evil. Same thing with money. And so we need to be on guard because money can be used for good, but it's also very dangerous. Money is also very dangerous. When we make money our end goal in life or our supreme pursuit, then we're on a dangerous path. It leads to all kinds of other evils, other sins. One of the things that's dangerous about money is that it never satisfies. It never satisfies. How many people do you know who have a lot of money and yet they're still looking for more? Or they have a lot of wealth and material things, and they have a nice house or a nice car or nice possessions, but a new thing comes out and they want to get the newest thing, right? They're all the time seeking more. It's not an accident that people who are wealthy are sometimes more depressed than even people who are not wealthy, who live within their means and have a modest income. I remember one time listening to a radio program. It was a sports radio program, and they were talking about a particular athlete who had reportedly attempted to commit suicide. And this was a person who was incredibly wealthy, very successful football player. And I remember them talking about his publicist or his spokesperson basically trying to push off the idea that he had tried to commit suicide. And one of the things that she said was, he has 30 million reasons not to commit suicide. As if $30 million in the bank is enough to make you happy. We all know that's not true. And people can have all kinds of money and yet not be satisfied and still be looking, still be seeking for the ultimate satisfaction of their souls. And that's why Jesus says to the woman at the well, come to me, right? And I'll give you living water and you'll never thirst again. So it never satisfies. You're always going to want more. Another problem with wealth is that it leads to all kinds of other evils. If you think about it, think about some of the Ten Commandments. Think about not coveting. Okay? Don't covet. Don't want what is not yours, what belongs to someone else. Well, if you covet something, you might be tempted to steal it, right? You might be tempted to commit adultery with someone else's spouse. You might be tempted to do someone physical harm or kill someone in order to get money or wealth. You think about why people do the crimes that they do, why people are in prison. Aren't a lot of them connected to money? In some way, some fashion, drugs, violence, robbery. A lot of them are connected to money. Money leads to all kinds of other evils. Also, wealth is fleeting, isn't it? It's fleeting. It's here today. It's gone tomorrow. It's temporary. Money is not for sure. It's not a sure thing. One, because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Do you remember that parable that Jesus told in the Gospel of Luke? This man had all this wealth, and he was going to build bigger barns so that he could set aside all this grain and just kick it back and take it easy. And the Lord comes to him and says, you're a fool because your soul is going to be required of you tonight. We don't know what tomorrow brings. So all of the money in the world cannot guarantee us tomorrow. And when we die, Ecclesiastes says, we pass it on to somebody else who doesn't deserve it. And so it's vanity. It's fleeting. It's here today. It's gone tomorrow. And if we do have wealth and we're successful, another problem with money is that it can lead us to be self-sufficient. And we can be prideful. And we can put our trust in ourselves instead of in God. So money is very dangerous. It's not an accident. It's for a very particular reason that Jesus says to watch out for money. You can't serve both. You can serve God and you cannot serve God and money. You can serve one or the other. And Jesus also says that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. Because it's dangerous. It is a very powerful temptation. And many people are sucked in by it. And so money can be good, but it's also dangerous. And we also need to remember that wisdom is much more important than wealth. Wisdom is much more important than wealth. Of everything that Proverbs says about money, it always says that wisdom is better. Wisdom is more precious than gold. It's better than fine jewels. And so wisdom is better than money. We also need to learn the secret of contentment. Learn the secret of contentment. Paul talks about that in Philippians, doesn't he? He says, in whatever situation, whatever condition that the Lord has put him in, Paul says, I have learned to be content. Now, that's not something that comes naturally. That's not something that comes easy. Sometimes you have to go through hard times in order to learn that. Sometimes you have to go through times of plenty to learn that, to learn that money doesn't satisfy, or to go through times of hardship to learn that you can depend on God. And so Paul says, I've been through all those situations. I've been in plenty and I've been in want, but I've learned in whatever condition, whatever state I am, to be content. And so it's a part of a process in which God is bringing us to come to this point of contentment where we trust what he has given us and don't set our eyes on worldly wealth. So a right view of money, a balanced view of money. Proverbs also has a lot to say about how we get money, acquiring money. The main way that we acquire money in Proverbs is to work hard. Work hard. All the way throughout Proverbs, you'll find many, many verses that set up on one side and the other a diligent man and a lazy person. And the diligent person leads to wealth and prosperity. The lazy person leads to poverty. And so Proverbs uplifts, it lifts up the importance of working hard and diligence. Another thing that Proverbs emphasizes in acquiring money is to not compromise our integrity or our character in order to gain wealth. You might be tempted in order to get more money, you might be tempted to cut corners on God's truth, on God's commands. You might be tempted to imbalance the scales using Old Testament language. One of the things that Proverbs says is an abomination before God is a merchant who uses dishonest scales. In other words, you're saying that you're selling something, but you're really not. You're cheating the person out of what they rightfully have paid for. Dishonest scales. One of the things that Proverbs also talks about is making sure that if you're a landowner or an employer, that you pay your workers on time, that you don't defraud them, that you don't take away from them, that you give them what you owe them. So don't put money ahead of other things. Don't use illegitimate means. Don't compromise your character. Don't compromise God's commands to earn wealth. And that takes trust, doesn't it? We have to trust that God is good and that God is wise, and that if I do what is right, God will provide for his children and not seek an illegitimate means to get money, but to trust God and do it the right way. And so don't compromise your integrity. In this section, he also talks about gambling and the lottery. Should Christians gamble and play the lottery? Well, lots of things that we could discuss here. And this is kind of a hot button issue in our state right now. It seems like they keep bringing this back up every now and then, that to try to pass a lottery or to legalize gambling in the state. And a lot of states have gambling. A lot of states have lotteries. And some of them try to set it up within a good, or set it up as a means of doing good, like maybe providing for education or for other good programs. But I think with gambling, the damaging side effects far outweigh any good that come from it. He gives a statistic in here that shocked me, and that is that about $600 billion a year is spent on gambling in the United States. that's more money than is spent on groceries. So more money spent on gambling in the United States than is spent on food to feed your family. So here are several things that are wrong with gambling. One, it undermines a diligent work ethic because it tries to create a shortcut to wealth aside from the honest means that God has provided for us. So it tries to undermine the work ethic. It encourages people to hope for wealth without working for it. Another problem with it is that it's really irrational, isn't it? Gambling is irrational. The odds are against you. The odds are against you. It is set up so that there are more losers than there are winners. It has to be set up that way. Otherwise, every casino would go out of business, right? Every lottery would go out of business. It's set up so that most people will lose. And so it's irrational. And because of that, because it's set up so most people will lose, it exploits people. It takes advantage of people. It gives them a hope of something that will likely never, ever come. It exploits people. I think one of the saddest things that I have seen is on, I believe this was on, it was a holiday. I think it was maybe Thanksgiving. I forget what it was, but I was driving and I think I was with Anna. Was this Thanksgiving? It was Christmas. So Christmas, we had gone to see a movie and we came back and we had to stop at a gas station, and this gas station was full on Christmas, and there were people sitting at a picnic table scratching lottery tickets on Christmas. And it was just a sad sight to me that this is their hope. This is what they're putting everything in. And it was a discouraging sight. And it seems like a lot of people who gamble, a lot of people who play the lottery are the people who can't afford it. They're the ones who can't afford it in the first place, and they're being exploited. And so it's irrational. It undermines work ethic. It exploits people. It often leads to a lot of other evils in society. Crime rates rise. A lot of other problems come with gambling. And so it's a destructive system. Christians shouldn't be a part of it. It's not a wise use of resources, and it exploits people. And so this is not a way, it's not a legitimate way to acquire money. Work hard, be faithful, invest wisely. That's how you acquire money according to God's wisdom. Well, what about spending money? How do we use our money? One thing that Proverbs lifts up is giving generously to others. Give generously. So give to those who are in need. Now, don't lift up. Proverbs is clear to make sure we understand that we're not to support sluggards. So those who are not willing to work, those who are not willing to go out and do what's necessary to feed themselves or their family, we're not supposed to prop up their laziness. But there are those who are legitimately going through difficult times, through a lot of different situations. Maybe they have made bad choices, but now they're working hard to try to make it right. I think we can help people like that. They're trying to do what's right. They're working hard. There are people who things have happened to them that were really outside of their control. We need to help people in those situations. So we need to be people who are generous. We also, according to Proverbs, need to be wise in controlling our spending, living within our means, making a plan. Proverbs talks about making plans and making sure that we're thinking ahead. So we don't go out and just buy whatever we see, but we're careful to just buy what we need. Don't buy impulsively, but buy according to a plan. So control expenditures, exercise self-control. Don't spend money that you don't have, which leads to staying out of debt. So make a plan and seek to stay out of debt. In Proverbs, debt is regarded as slavery, as bondage. Those who are in debt are in bondage to others. The borrower becomes the lender's slave. It's very often unwise to engage in borrowing because, one, you're going to end up paying more for it in the end, And you may also find yourself losing things because you can't know what the future is going to bring. So whenever you borrow, you're presuming on the future, aren't you? You're presuming on the future that tomorrow is going to be just like today, and I'm going to have my budget every month is going to be the same as it is this month, and I'm going to have enough money to pay that payment every month. So you're presuming that you know what the future is going to bring. But if you do borrow, a wise man pays his obligations. He doesn't renege on them. He doesn't seek to find cover in bankruptcy. And so, you know, try to stay out of debt, avoid debt, but is it ever legitimate to borrow money? Well, I think one of the things that wisdom teaches us is we need to make sure that we're on a firm financial footing and not borrow above our means. And so there are all kinds of people out there that are borrowing way beyond what their means can handle. And the lenders, unfortunately, were all too glad to let them do it, which was partially what led to our recession in 2008, wasn't it? A lot of home lenders lending people money, mortgages that they knew they couldn't afford. And so when things started to go down, people couldn't afford those mortgages, and the whole system was affected by it. And so a wise person, you know, if they need to borrow for a large purchase like a home, then they would seek to put themselves in a good financial position first by saving up money for a down payment so that they will always have more equity in their home so that they can at least sell it and get out from underneath the obligation. So they should be doing it with wisdom and with faithfulness in repaying the debts. One of the things that Proverbs is very emphatic about money is never enter into a co-signing agreement. Never enter into a co-signing agreement. And this is something that you're faced with sometimes, isn't it? This is a very practical question because you may find a friend or a family member or someone who comes to you and says, hey, will you co-sign this for me? I need a car, or I need to buy a house or a college loan. Co-sign this. And Proverbs says, emphatically, that's the worst thing you can do. Because you're putting yourself, your name, on someone else's debt, and if they renege, then it falls on you. And you have to pay. And so you can lose your house, you can lose your possessions because of the mishandling of resources of someone else. It's a very foolish thing to do. And also, he makes a really good point here, and that is, if someone needs a co-signer to begin with, then they're not in a good position to borrow. They're not in a good position to borrow. They don't have a good financial footing to borrow money in the first place. So avoid co-signing. And I would say on either end, if you're someone who needs to borrow and they ask you to co-sign, then you're not ready to borrow yet. And if you're someone who is asked, will you co-sign this for me? Say no. Just say no. No matter how much you love this person, say no. It would be better for you to hand them a gift of $1,000 and say, here, I'm going to give this to you. It's yours. No strings attached. It would be better to do that and show generosity than it would to be put your name on a loan that someone else is paying for. So, spending money wisely. Proverbs also talks about saving money and anticipating future expenses. It uses the example of the ant preparing, gathering food in summer, preparing for winter, for what's coming later. So not necessarily looking to be incredibly wealthy or having everything you need supplied for the rest of your life, but you do need to plan ahead and for certain things that may be outside of your control that you don't know about, things that may come. Accumulate wealth and invest wisely. Now, why would you want to accumulate wealth? Well, not necessarily for wealth's sake. We want to do it not for the love of money, but we want to do it for wisdom's sake. We want to do it for the rainy day. We want to do it to have to give when someone's in need. We want to have so that we can give to a worthy gospel missions project or something like that. So it's good to accumulate wealth for uncertain times that are ahead. And also we need to invest wisely. Invest wisely, not in get rich quick schemes, not fly-by-night things that can that promise to make you wealthy overnight, but wisely, firm, steady investments that work over time. Is it wrong to receive interest from others? Well, one of the things that the law says is that a Jew, an Israelite, was never to charge interest to another Israelite. So they were not to exploit their fellow brothers by charging them interest. I would say that could probably apply to the church as well, that Christians should not be seeking to make a profit out of other Christians. Now, does that mean that a Christian can't own a bank and lend money to people? I don't think that's what I'm saying. But whenever possible, from Christian to Christian, don't charge interest on a loan. And also, I would say that it's not wrong to receive interest from a legitimate investment. So he mentions that in the chapter that, you know, it's not wrong to receive interest on an investment or from something that you're doing to gain some income. But especially when it comes to other believers, we should not be seeking to make a profit off of them. But we should be willing to help them. Proverbs also talks about leaving an inheritance to our children. Leaving an inheritance. Why? Just so that we can be a blessing to them. So that we can give them a help and a foundation for what they're going to do later in life. Now, at the same time, I think we also need to teach them how to handle wealth, how to handle money wisely, so that when they are blessed with an inheritance, they have the right view on it. And they know how to handle it. And they know how to invest it. They know how to put it to good use and not just spend it unwisely. So what's the conclusion? Make it your goal to be wise, not necessarily rich. That was Solomon's pursuit, wasn't it? When God came to him, said, whatever you want, I will give it to you. What did Solomon choose first? He chose wisdom. But in the end, God also blessed him with the others as well, with wealth and with a successful kingdom. But make it your first goal to seek God and his wisdom. And also remember that you can't take it with you. You can't. It's very temporal. It's here today, gone tomorrow. What did Jesus say? Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where it can rot and where people can steal it, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, right? Where it is secure for all of eternity. And this talk about money also brings us around to thinking about the gospel, because the gospel is talked about in terms of debt, isn't it? The gospel is talked about in terms of debt. We have a debt of sin that was infinite that we would have to pay for eternity. And yet God in Christ took our debt of sin upon himself, and he paid for it. And then he also lavished us with his righteousness. And so God took our debt. He redeemed us. He bought us. He bought us from our bondage to sin. He set us free. And then he blessed us with the inheritance of riches and glory, an eternal inheritance laid up for us. And so 2 Corinthians 8:9 says that Christ, though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that through his poverty you might become rich. It's an amazing thought, isn't it? That Christ would take our debt upon himself and then bless us with his eternal wealth. That's what's at the heart of the gospel. And so Proverbs calls us to live wisely in this world, remembering that everything belongs to God, but what we have been blessed with, we are to use wisely for the glory of God.